All right, so go ahead and open your Bibles to Luke 12, and we'll get started this morning. So the parable this week is the parable of the watchful servant, and we're going to. So we know what Teresa's doing while I'm doing the Sunday school lesson, right?
Did you look at me
and thought? So I want to do something that's kind of odd this week, and I want to focus on one word in this parable, and that word is, well, you could look at watch or watchful, and I want to focus on that, and that's kind of what we're going to base the lesson off of this week, and I want to read you a quote. So there's many Christians waiting for the return of Jesus Christ, but not that many who are watching for the return of Jesus Christ. The Bible doesn't teach us to wait for his return. We're to watch for his return. So what is the difference between waiting and watching?
Waiting is more passive and watching more active.
Exactly right. So I'm gonna read you a little story right here. Source unknown. A bunch of Navy men returning from a long voyage in the seas. As the boat approached the shore, the men were all looking for their wives and girlfriends on the shore, eagerly to see them again. As the men looked over the crowd of women lined up, and their air of excitement and expectancy grew. One man, however, was all alone, as all the other men found their wives and their girlfriends, and they all embraced. His wife wasn't there. Worried, he hurried home. And found the light on in his house. As he entered, he was relieved to see his wife. She quickly turned and said, "Honey, I've been waiting on you." His response showed his disappointment, however. He said the other men's wives and girlfriends was watching for them. The difference between waiting and watching is very clear. So another guy wrote another example, says, "Would you rather... What would you rather have when the enemy might attack? Someone on guard duty who is simply waiting for the enemy to show up, or someone on guard duty who is watching to see if the enemy shows up?" So there's a big difference between waiting and watching. And to use a word you use, passive. And I think there's a lot of passive Christians in the world today. And I promise you, everybody sitting in this room at some point during the last week have been passive Christians. It's an easy rut to fall into. It's an easy rut to get up on Sunday morning and come to Sunday school or church, and you put your money in the little box and you listen to the sermon and you go home and you wait till next Sunday and you get up and you repeat the story all over again. That's a passive Christian. Yeah, passive Christians can come to church, sure can, but that is a passive Christian. And as a Christian that is waiting for Jesus' return. Now, as we look at this parable today, I want you to think about watchful. And I want you to think about, obviously, and as usual, we'll talk about the Greek word here in a minute, but there's lots of ways that we become active versus passive. And that way can take on so many different forms in so many different ways. We're going to look at some of those today and kind of let us understand, because if I turn around and had Ronnie or Jeff or Linda or anybody to make a list of the things you did last week, as a Christian, and that's probably a bad terminology to use, but you don't want to talk about. So what are the things that you did? Read your Bible, you did this, you did this. If Ronnie was to make a list, and Jeff make a list, and Linda make a list, you can't judge Linda about what Ronnie does or Ronnie about what Linda does, right? But because there's no, it's not a comparison thing. It's a thing to where your service is at. But as Paul says, James says, it's the visual of the fruits of their labors, the things that you do because you want to do them. You know, how do you know that they're child of God? You know, by the fruits of their labor. So as we go through it today, it's not as much as what you do. It's the watchful side of it and the fact that you're doing things. Okay, does that make sense? Right. So as we go through, again, I want you to focus on this. So I want to read a part today, and we're going to look at Luke, and I'm going to read this section out of Luke, and I had it pulled up and shut it down. And we're going to start at, I think it's verse 35. Sorry. All right. So now then, Jesus is teaching. So he's somewhere on his way back towards Galilee. He stopped to teach. And as we did the lesson last week and talked about the building of the bigger barns, then Jesus was interrupted by the guy and was asked about him helping with his inheritance. So this follows right after that. It's just a few verses right after that. So it's during this teaching part that Jesus is speaking to this big crowd that I believe it was Luke said they were so big they were trampling on each other. So it's obviously a great big crowd that's gathered. So Luke 12:35, let your waist be girded and your lamps burning. So I've probably said this before. So the term girding your waist comes from, and this was something that people in first century Jerusalem would have been very familiar with. The common cloth was a very loose robe-like dress that went all the way down the ground, very loose fitting to be cooler. Most of them had like a rope type belt that would go around the waist. Well, when you got ready to run or you got ready to do work, you would gird. And that gird was you take that rope and you would pull everything up and you would tuck it in that rope and it will allow you to be where you can do work. So the analogy there is you prepare yourself for work, right? And of course, the lamp's burning. And you yourselves will be like men who wait for their master when he returns from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, they may open to him immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Assuredly, I say to you that he will gird himself and have them sit down to eat and will come and serve them. This is the master. We're going to touch on all these coming back. And if he should come in the second watch, I believe, is from 9 to midnight. There's three watches for the Jews. I can't remember the exact times. Or come on the third watch and find them so, blessed are those servants. But know this, that if the master of the house had not had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. And then to add onto this, then Peter asked him, Lord, do you speak this parable only to us or to all the people? And the Lord said, who then that is faithful and wise steward, whom his master will make ruler of his household to give them the portion of food in due season? So he's actually talking to his blessed is a servant whose master will find him doing when he comes. So now let's kind of unpack that, because you know that's a lot of things that we go in and look at. All right. There's a common phrase in the New Testament when we're talking about the day of the Lord, and it starts out with something to the similar of watch or be on watch for the day of the Lord's coming. And it talks about thief in the night. It talks about, there's a lot of synonyms that talk about different things about when the Lord's coming, right? And, watch in such instances does not really mean watch. And so if you look up the Greek word that translates from W-A-T-C-H, it's opoi. And opoi actually means a watch. No, not this kind of watch, but a watch. So if you have a watch, with exception of an iWatch, but if you have a watch, what does that watch do? Change the time. So if you're looking at that watch, you can also see you know where it's at now, and you got an idea of the time on how long it's going to be to another time that you're interested in. So it's not as much of a waiting function as it is a watching function, a watch. And when you become watchful, you're a non-passive person. You're actually doing something. A watch is running constantly all the time. So that's where the Greek word comes into it at, all right? Luke 21:36 says, "Watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted as worthy to escape all things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man." So, you know, again, watch. Interpretations led to a whole bunch of things in different churches. Church of God actually had people assigned in the churches at some point in the past, I don't remember the time, to watch CNN, Fox, BBC, and those other things on things that was going on in the world to determine if the end was near.
Good accurate information.
Yeah. You know, can't make this stuff up, right? All right. So now then, so the translation that we're looking for here in the Greek word that goes watchful is a word that talks about the literal translation is no sleeping. Being non-passive or you're actively watching, like we talked about the guard actually watching for the enemy. All right. Luke 21:34-35 says, "But take heed to yourself, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of life, that the day come when you're unexpected, for it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth." All right. So as we go through, as Jesus is teaching and he's talking, you know, he's given these people listening a lot of this information about his second coming. Now, obviously, they don't understand what we understand now, and second coming to them was a hard thing to really grasp onto. I mean, we've got a few thousand years to understand the writings of all the Gospels. So Jesus is teaching this, and he's teaching things that are very, very foreign to him and bring him on. One guy wrote, and he said, "Watching signifies a state of being untouched by any influence that can cloud one's mind. Watching is on alert for the dangers. This state is not transpired from the following or deeply analyzing any current event. Because if the Lord God will not tell his own son when he returns, he's sure not going to tell CNN. I thought that was pretty good. All right. So now then, if we're required to wait or to watch, then you and I better learn how to do this right. You know, we need to learn how to do it right. Verse 35 says, "Be dressed for the service and keep your lamps burning like men waiting for the master return." So we're going to look at three good things about a waiter, not waiter as in food, all right? So first is be dressed in readiness. The more literally translated, let your waist be girded. Some translation says be dressed in readiness. The typical common work attires I talked about was that tunic, and they would gather up this. For one thing, one guy wrote, he said to gather up the tunic was best for running and fighting. And I thought, then I remembered he's talking about actually battle. So here you're battling in this tunic. Be kind of like, you know, kind of running with a sheet draped around you, kind of hard, right? Gird up your loins became the idiom for being ready for action. The second illustration connects this command with your lamps burning. Have your loins girded, you must have your lamps lit. And why did he use this lamps? Lamps, well, obviously a means of lighting at the time. But if you went out at night, you carry your lamp with you. You would also, you know, you could see, it would give you the opportunity to see at night, but it also gave people the opportunity to see you. And, you know, we talked in here on the second parable we did, talked about the lamp on the lampstand or the lamp underneath the basket. And you can look at that in several different ways. And you can look at it from the fact that if your lamp's lit, then you're a non-passive or an active Christian, and you're actually showing things to the world, and you're showing the world who you are. Third, the readiness is also open door when the master returns. verse 36 says, be like men who are waiting for their master when he returns from the wedding feast, so that they may immediately open the door when he comes and knocks. The master is, you know, obviously at home with the wedding. The slaves don't know when he's going to return. He could stay longer. Verse 36 makes it emphasize specifically mentioning the second and third watches of the night. But as I mentioned before, the Jews had three watches. Romans had four, for what it's worth. And Jesus makes a point that the slave is found ready whenever the master returns is greatly blessed. Verse 37 talks about it, which really seems like odd for that time and period. The master is so pleased that the slave is ready and watching for his return that he turns around and caters them a meal. He serves them. See this, you know, the significance on that. All right. Jesus gives another point of illustration in verse 39. He says, but sure of this, if the head of the house has known what hour the thief was coming, he would not allow his house to be broken into. One guy wrote, he says, if you're not ever watchful and prepared to prevent the thief, then he'll break in and steal from you. The technical word for break in there, the Greek word is talking about dig through or dig under. I guess it was digging under the dirt floors. Mark 2:4 describes the friend of the lame man who dug through the ceiling, you know, and they put the guy through the ceiling. So if you knew when the thief was coming, you'd be prepared to prevent him from entering your home, right? The problem is, obviously, the thieves don't go around and tell you, hey, I'm going to be at your house on 2:00 Tuesday afternoon, and you'd be ready for it, you know. But in modern times, you know, we'd set up a camera and warn us when somebody's crazy going on, all right? In verse 40, Jesus specifically tells them, be prepared to happen. You too be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect him, just like the slaves waiting on that. When Jesus talks about the watchful servant, and now he's talking about a thief, I want to touch on just in a minute the difference between the servant and the thief. And if you think about the servant and the master coming back, who is the master in this case? Jesus. Yeah, Jesus is the intended person of the master here. But when he talks about the thief, who then is he talking about the thief? To me, it's a play on different ones. So obviously the thief is not, you know, when the thief comes, it's like the thief is the person who is coming that does not have the best intentions, in other words, and he's not going to be the Christian person that comes. I thought it was interesting because it plays off of that several times. We'll get into that more here just in a minute. So Peter asked a question in 12:41. He says, Lord, are you addressing this parable to us as well? Jesus doesn't answer directly, but his answer includes everyone by dividing him into two groups. Those who are faithful and those who are not. He explains the great blessings in the faithful one in 42 through 44. Who then is faithful and sensible steward whom his master puts in charge of service to give them relation to proper time? Blessed is the slave who master finds him doing what he does when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all his possessions. Right? So there's a whole bunch, if you go through the concordance and you look at it, there's a whole bunch of scriptures that they tie into that. One of them is to he who as much is given, much is expected. So there's a lot of scriptures that tie into that, to that same statement. But then Jesus moves on to another end then. And he says the master and servant image was intended to encouragement to those who would wait as Jesus described. So it's an encouragement to it. The owner thief image is a warning to those who do not expectantly wait for the Lord's return. In the first image, Jesus is portraying his master who is welcome, who rewards the servants faithfully doing. In the second, Jesus comes as the thief. And I know that sounds kind of weird. Who is not welcome and whose arrival spells a disaster. So if we're on a watchful side, are we on the good servant or are we a victim of the thief?
Good servant.
The Without a doubt.
We're excited to see him, but if he's a thief to us, then we're in love with our sin and we just want him to go away. Don't bother me.
Yeah.
Love my sins.
Yeah, please don't come.
Yeah.
Please don't come. Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. So now then, so what is it makes a difference? What determines if he's a welcome master or not? So just talk about it. The answer is suggested by two stories but made clear in the Gospels. And the difference is the relationship that we have with Christ or the lack of that relationship, obviously. He who hopes a thief never comes versus bringing as a loss. Those who trusted Jesus would see him as a source of every good and perfect gift. All right. One guy wrote and he said, did you notice that while there are many differences between the servants of the first parable and the house owner of the second part of the parable, there is one thing that's the same. Neither the servant nor the house owner knew the time the Lord would return. The delay of the Lord, along with the lack of knowing exactly when to return, can produce very different results. For the true follower of Jesus, the delay process produces anticipation and expectation. For the unbeliever who does not love the Lord or take pleasure in an anticipation of return, his delay produces a very different response, which will be played out in verse 45. So in 45, he says, but that if the servant says in his heart, my master is delayed in coming, and begins to beat the male and female servants and eat and drink and be drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking for him and an hour when he's not aware, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the unbelievers. So two cautions to follow from that. Number one, the danger of trying to find a precise blueprint of God's actions at the end of time. Jesus is telling the parable, we can learn from it, but he's not giving a detailed theological description of God's dealing when he returns. Very easily, we can overinterpret his words. If you Google, again, I got on a rabbit hole last night with this. If you look at people, and I'm talking about, quote, religious groups, that have worked to try to determine the date of Jesus' return, you get some really, really weird people. I mean, it's the spaceship. It was the asteroid at one point?
Hale-Bopp Comet,
that's what it was. And there was, they've been, through the years, they have been pastors that's convinced people to sell everything they have and sit and wait. So I go back to what the guy said. If God doesn't tell his own son when he's coming, I don't think CNN is going to find out. I don't think that's that. The other caution is the danger of uninterpreting his words. Yeah. So this, the flip side of that, we must not treat it as a point by point outline of how God will reward and punish people. But there's a very clear message. There are blessings for those who serve faithfully, the dire consequences for those who abuse their possession. You know, I know I've got friends and people I know that it's possession of material things is everything to them. It's everything to them. And then you have people on the other side that material things is not what drives the world, even though they may have material things, but it's not what drives the world. And I think that sometimes it's really hard for us to separate, you know, like last week we talked about what are you barns? What barns do you have in your life? So I think sometimes it gets hard to separate, and sometimes it's really easy to get caught up in. And I think that's the biggest thing you're getting caught up in. And, if you say, well, don't overanalyze it and don't look at it, but yet I think we need to take the warning, and I think it's the warning and a suggestion, but as much as anything else. There's a warning part of this, you know, coming as a thief in the night, and there's another side of it as being a watchful servant. And what is the gains from being a watchful servant? Well, obviously it's fantastic. James warns that not many would become teachers in the church because they know what they teach will be those who teach will be judged more strictly. Leadership of God's people is a serious business, and carelessness in that calling has the most serious consequences. Other side of it, with those cautions, he said, here's a parable Jesus put forth to his disciples, right? All right, so let's go on with this. A guy wrote, he says, one of two things might follow. One possibility is that the manager does exactly what he's told when the homeowner returns, everything's he wanted, and the manager has proven himself trustworthy, and he's promoted. So he gets the benefit or the praise of the master returning. Now he's in charge of all the owner's possessions. The alternative possibility is that the homeowner is no longer respected and no sign of the master returning. The manager bullies and beats all the servants, eats his food, drinks his wine, and the master will be gone for years. So why would he worry? But the master has no warning, comes back. He finds disorder, instructions have been ignored. And you know, the manager knew his task to take care of. So that's an interesting point. So if we look and being watchful, I think there's a part to us where we have to read God's word. We have to listen to God's word. It was in Sunday school or in church to understand what we have to do. I've always said, I think one of the biggest travesties there is among Christians is we don't know why we believe what we believe. We just believe it, but we believe it, but we don't understand what we need to do to fulfill it or to act on it or to do service. I don't know how many, Jeff or Ronnie may know, how many opportunities, if you go through the list, is there to serve on that list that we have? Y'all ever count them up? Could be, 100, 150? I would say, you know, I would say that list of things and places to serve would show of less than probably 25-30% of our members, though. Wouldn't you say so?
That's a 20. What's it?
Mm-hmm. The 80-20 rule. Yeah. So my point is that you take all these people that we've got as members. So there's a bunch of people that have to be not doing anything, and therefore they're not being watchful. They're just waiting. So it comes back to a service standpoint too. And I think that's one of the big things that we need to do. All right. I'm looking on time here. All right. Jesus' first parable concerning being ready for the master's delay concerned all of his master's servants. The second many parables, of course, about the thief. The steward that Jesus holds up for a claim is not doing something particularly flashy or creative. He's just continuing to do his duty day after day without fail. Again, serving without forgetting, without unexplained lapses. This is virtue, is faithfulness, and you can count on him. And I think that's a huge, huge point. So I want to close this with a couple of things right here. The Bible teaches again that we are to be watching for the return of Jesus, not waiting for the return. Those who watch will keep themselves alert, self-controlled. Those simply waiting may slip into a sloppy businesses with other things and let the priorities slip. And then as we look through, is this indicates the last days. I thought it was interesting. I'm gonna pull this out. A lot of people talking about, you know, I remember my dad talking back in the 70s, you know, things are really bad. You know, he said it wouldn't surprise him if Jesus come the next day. And this was back in the 70s. You know, if he could see this now, he would really flip out. Paul says there will be terrible times. People will be lovers of self, money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having forms of godliness, but denying his power. That could go on CNN. During the Constitutional Convention in 1787, it was proposed that the National Army would be limited to 3,000 men. George Washington stood up and said, he was presiding, of course, made the comment. He said, then we should have another article proving that no foreign nation with an army exceeding 3,000 men are allowed to invade us. Not prepared, right? So Are we just killing time watching for Jesus to return? Or are you truly making time to be productive while watching for his return? One role of the church waiting for Christ's return is that of sentry. If we're watchful or on guard duty, we're to understand the days in which we live. A good guard is alert mentally and disciplined and self-controlled. The church moving closer to the day of Christ will come. Be on guard, saints. Be watchful. I thought as we close this, and this class by far does a great amount of work in this church and very, very giving. And you know, you always, lots of times you hear the adage, well, we can always do more, and we can. I agree with that. You have to be real careful too. You can't burn yourself out. But there's, you know, as we go into next week. And as you read this, go back and read this parable again and read a few verses before and afterwards, because it talks about it a little bit clearer. Think about being watchful, or think about waiting, because as we're watchful, and again, I'm not saying you got to have 15 things on your list, but as being watchful and stewards of what we've been given, not what we earn, but what we've been given through salvation, is the fruits of our labor should show that and benefit it. And, you know, sometimes it's phone calls, sometimes it's letters, sometimes it's notes, sometimes it's a casserole. I mean, there's lots of ways to serve. And, you know, again, I think this class does a great job. But as we go through, look at it next week and pray about it. Stop recording here.